Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Friends, today we conclude our six-week series called Me, Myself, and Why, Self-Awareness and the Enneagram, with a conversation about contemplative practice and the Enneagram. Really as a way to give you some tools to help put some of this information into action in our daily lives. The New Testament book of James offers a similar sentiment that he says, in the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. Similarly, we can get super self-aware, we can read a ton of books, we can get really head knowledge about a tool like the Enneagram and even know a lot about ourselves, but if we never really learn to integrate what we are learning into our lives, that knowledge is basically lost. And contemplation is a way to do that integration. And given the amount of stimulus, information, communication just bombarding us in our daily lives all the time, creating intentional spaces for silence and solitude and stillness are increasingly important for us. You know, we talk a lot about contemplation during Lent, this season that we're in right now, because Lent is a season of introspection and heightened awareness about our growth areas. And contemplation is like the road that takes us from that heightened awareness from up here in our heads into the rest of our bodies, where it could be transformed, where literally we can change how we are in the world. Contemplation is what moves us from simply thinking about what we want to change into embodying that change on a deep and even metaphysical level. One of my favorite teachers, his name is Dr. Joe Dispenza. You might be familiar with him. He's a researcher, spiritual teacher guy. He researches a lot about neuroscience and quantum physics. He says this. He says, when you change your thoughts and emotions, you can change the expression of your genes. This is because your cells are constantly monitoring your thoughts and being changed by them. Through sustained contemplation and focus, you can rewire your brain, therefore informing your cells to act in new ways, effectively reprogramming your body at a cellular level. This isn't just woo-woo spiritual stuff. This is real physicality. Author of a really great book called The Sacred Enneagram, Chris Hewerts, we mentioned him last week. He says this. He says, in silence, the fragmented parts of self come into greater wholeness. And over time, we experience through silence the wisdom of the Enneagram, a gentle invitation to come home to our true self. It's not enough just to become an Enneagram enthusiast. Real transformation takes place when we pair the self-awareness that the Enneagram stimulates with the silence of contemplative practice. Then our unique path to spiritual growth emerges, and we will never be the same. Now, the way that we are going to approach this topic of contemplative practice today was very much informed by Chris and his book and some of his work. And last week, if you were with us, we talked about the three intelligence centers, head, heart, and body. We'll put this image on the screen for you. And as a quick review, you might remember that the conversation last week, we identified these three identity lies and these three programs for happiness that each of these intelligence centers are kind of bent toward, right? So remember, if you're a body type, 8, 9, or 1, you're most likely to believe the lie about your identity that I am what I do. And your program for happiness likely has something to do with gaining power and control. And if you're a heart type, 2, 3, or 4, you're more likely to believe that I am what others say about me. And you may find yourself just always gravitating toward earning people's affection and their esteem to be able to create your own happiness. And if you're a head type, 5, 6, or 7, you're more likely to believe that lie that says I am what I have and what I possess. And you might tend to, lead towards security and survival as a way of shoring up all of your possessions and making yourself happy, that's your kind of recipe, your program for happiness. And today, we're going to use that kind of framework about these three intelligence centers to help map out a plan for contemplative practice that's the most helpful for you and your position on the Enneagram. And if you are confused or you're still like, I have no idea what I am, don't worry about it. It's totally fine. Because as we approach these practices of silence and solitude and stillness, what you'll find is that all three of them are deeply helpful for all of us and healing for all of us to put into practice on a regular basis. So let's dive in, talk about these practices with my dear friends, Scott Hodge and Anna Hammond. All right, Scott, Anna, hi.
Hey.
As we continue our conversation today, would you each just remind us which Enneagram type you are, and therefore like which of the three intelligence centers that you land in? Scott?
My name is Scott, and I identify as a 7.
Hi, Scott.
Which is head center.
Yeah. Head center.
I'm a type 4, so I'm in the heart center.
Okay. And I'm a type 9, so I am body center, which works out really well for our conversation today because each of us represent each of these three intelligence centers that we're learning about. And in particular, we're learning about how to go about contemplative practice in a way that is most aligned and most beneficial and healing for our particular intelligence center. There's been a lot of writing on this. I had mentioned Chris Hewitt in his book called The Sacred Enneagram earlier. And one of the things that he and others talk about are these, the three kind of pillars of contemplative practice of solitude, silence, and stillness. And how each one of those kind of maps to each one of these intelligence centers and therefore sections of the Enneagram. And how wild this is, I love how this how all works out, is it's like, you know, these numbers that we have that we, and even these intelligence centers that we have, they often, as we learned just a little bit ago, have certain core fears and core wounds and core things that we're trying to overcome, these lies that we're most susceptible to, these patterns of ways that we tend to kind of gravitate towards seeking to create, manufacture our own happiness. And each of these contemplative practices are like these subtle corrections to the compulsions that come from our intelligence centers, the head, heart, and gut. So I want to walk through each one of those with you and just then here give a little bit of feedback, and would love to hear, explore a little bit how each of these contemplative practices work for each of us. So those of you who are heart-centered, which among us would be Anna, that's people who are the 2, 3, and 4, are people that are very relational people, tend to be very connection heavy, almost to the point of obsession. These are feeling types of people. And for them, solitude is the crucial contemplative practice. Now I say crucial, and I want to make note of this, that all three of these are really wonderful practices for all of us. Solitude, stillness, right. Silence, all for all of us, right? But the way that this works is that one of these, for your type, tends to be the thing that's like, yeah, that's a good starting point. And one of the things, you know, for people who are these types, who are very people-oriented, it draws them kind of back into themselves. We have a lot of like communication in life that just scatters everywhere. And what solitude does is it puts us in a state of just being with ourselves, return to the essence of selves. It teaches us how to practice being with ourselves well, being alone well, being with God well. Anna, I'd love to turn it to you, just ask, hearing this and kind of knowing this and living this out as a 4, how does this sit with you? What's your experience been like with solitude?
Two things come to mind when I think about solitude. And the first is that I actually really like solitude. And I think it's funny that my first thought was, is that okay? Because I was like, well, if it's a spiritual practice,
right. I should hate it.
Shouldn't it be unpleasant?
It's like eating your Wheaties or
what? Right.
Yeah, like Shouldn't it be like somehow uncomfortable or unpleasant if it's good for me?
Right.
And what, like, yeah. What a thought to take captive and examine.
Yeah.
I'll I mean, maybe you've gotten to the reframing, but I'll reframe it for you and go, hey, what if it's just that you're so in, you're in tune enough to know that is exactly what I need?
Well, what's interesting is as I considered this, I thought about when I was a child, and I went to school in a traditional school until I was in third grade, and I was miserable. I was so miserable. I have actual like trauma. Like I have actual PTSD from my school experience. And my parents, in their wisdom, took me out of school and chose to homeschool me. And I remember my fourth grade year sitting in my room alone, looking out the window and daydreaming. And that was, I think, one of the happiest times of my life. Like, when you look at it from the outside, it's like, oh, there's this lonely little kid who's just in her room, you know, looking at the tree branches. But I remember that time as being so healing and good. And looking back, I think it's because the school environment is so focused on performance and grades and what other people are thinking of me, what other people are saying about me. And that just like stifled my soul. And so then when I was given this gift of a year to just be, and I spent a lot of time alone, and probably my parents were a little concerned about me. Like, why we have this weird little kid who just wants to sit in her room and write poetry. But it brought me back to feeling like myself, which I mentioned a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I think a really important thing, and this is probably true for all three practices, that these are things, as I said a few weeks ago, what makes you feel like yourself? And I think when we can root down into these contemplative practices, it clears out the noise and helps us get back in touch with what makes me feel like myself.
I've heard it said that the
gift, I'm able to be away from the voices that are telling me what I should be or what I could be, and instead gets me back focusing on, no, this is who I am. And I actually like myself. And that's a really beautiful way, I think, to enter into contemplative practice of like, I feel like myself and I like myself. And that's mirrored for me in God.
I love that. I've heard it said that the Enneagram, the real gift of it is that it is a map to bring you home to yourself. And it seems that that's a way that you're using it and that these practices can be used. I think it's interesting, you know, as we talked about earlier, these sort of three lies that kind of creep in that we're more susceptible to toward our identity. And for your type, it would be this lie of that I am what other people say about me. And how the practice of solitude kind of helps clear that out of the way a little bit.
Yeah. Like, no, Scott, this is who I am.
I'd love to move to the head type, Scott, and that's
yeah,
that's
why don't you tell me what you think yourself. You know about me?
What do I know about you?
Pal, what do you know?
How do I get in your head? Well, the head types. it's interesting, and we'll see how this kind of sits with you, Scott, because the idea behind this and for the head type is that oftentimes you're so caught in your head and you're gravitating toward believing this lie that sort of says I am what I have, that if I can figure out how to acquire and accumulate or build a fortress of security around me, I can set myself up to be free from pain. And that causes it, it brings a lot of energy into the head. And so there's this need to turn that down. So silence is that like special medicine that helps turn down the inner noise inside the head. And it's this crucial thing that helps us listen and helps us dial back on all the distractions around us, teaches us to listen to ourselves, to God, to other people. Scott, tell me like what, like feeling through this stuff, how's that sit with you? And also what's your experience been like with this practice of silence?
Yeah, you know, so I think one of my greatest strengths is also one of my greatest enemies, and it's probably true for all of us. You know, there's always that shadow side to everything, and you know, so sevens are very inclined towards the future, right? You know, I'm always, my brain is almost always a few steps ahead of the average person or other people anyway. And I think I'm always like, I'm a great strategizer. And so it is, this has been a challenge for me. And I did not agree with the whole idea that a seven is very head-centered for a long time. I mean, I knew that that's what everyone said, but I always considered myself to be more of a feeler, and I was associating that with more of a heart thing. But and I am very much a feeler. I'm an empath, so I feel so much, you know. But yeah, I think like for us sevens, you know, it's so easy to get into this mode of like over planning, being very future oriented, you know, as opposed to sitting and actually feeling what's happening in the moment. And you know, we also have this fear of missing out. It's just, it's like the wheels are just always going like this. I remember when I was, you know, back when there was the Blockbuster videos, you know, you remember you just like walk in and there'd be this rows and rows of videos. My brain, I would literally go, brrr, brrr. I would scan every row, and I would be at the very end. And by the time, like whoever I was with would still be at the first, looking at the first rack, and they'd be like, what in the world? How did you? I'm like, I don't know. It's just how my brain works. Right. So for me, I think one of the most grounding and, centering things I can do. And I'm going to say, maybe I'm breaking a rule here, but I'm going to say it's not just silence for me. It's solitude and silence. Those two for me go hand in hand, because if I'm with others, then there's probably going to be talking happening, or head kind of connection happening. What I need is to be away and to be quiet, and to, you know, there's a little labyrinth down the street from my house that I love to walk down to, and just be totally quiet and walk it a couple of times. Getting in my car, I try to just turn everything off, unless I'm unless I'm not in a good place and I'm just trying to stay distracted. You know, nature is huge. I think anything that gets me out of my headspace, even cooking, like working with knives and food, like that gets me. I can't talk and think too much and do that. I kind of have this like one track mind. So if I can get my one track mind into a place of stillness in silence, that's probably like one of the best things that I could ever do, and the healthiest, and when I feel most alive spiritually as well.
Yeah, it's interesting how silence in particular can be when we live in a world that has so many messages, for someone who is like navigating life through their head intelligence, you're trying to process so much. Think of our brains like these like super processors that are trying to take in all this information. Silence allows that to like scale back.
So that it keeps me sane too, because I get so overstimulated, you know, so I can take in a lot, but that is also the problem. I get overstimulated and I want to freak out. Like I just can't. Sometimes it's with like in the car with kids, or just even like loud noises sometimes really kind of upset me. And I don't know. Who knows?
I'm that way too. I get almost like I'm like buzzing kind of. Like I'm like, oh, I need to go hang out in a dark room for a minute.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah. A lot of these show up almost like addictions to, like, I realize my addiction to like just noise around me. Like I play music all the time, like everywhere, like in the background, everywhere. So for me to turn that off is a step of intention. So maybe there's an invitation to kind of curate your space with less noise just in general. Yeah. For those of us who are in that triad, the 8, 9 and 1 triad, that we're the body type, the gut type. For us, the crucial practice is about stillness. And the way I think about it for me is about stopping doing. I think I've mentioned before how doing is this thing, like it helps me feel like I'm a part of society. I'm like doing, I'm creating, I'm moving things forward. there's this flip side, there's this downside, this negative side of it too, that is addictive in a way that makes me feel like if I'm not doing, then I'm not accomplishing anything, and also devalues my self-worth just at being. So this idea for me of being in a space where I can really tap into pure being, that my self-worth and my value, my wholeness comes from simply being. That just that thought, even saying it out loud, grounds me, and it takes me back, like I said, like back home. Breathing into my body has been a good thing for me. Moving my body, I think I discovered a few years ago that I'm like, not only am I just clumsy, but I'm like, I live out of my body sometimes. And to be like doing practices that involve the body are really helpful for me. How about you all? Anything on stillness that has
you
been
helpful?
You are
kind of clumsy.
I am super clumsy. I'm spraying. I mean, like, why do I have water even near my computer? Like,
I'm sorry. What was the question?
The practice of stillness, how has that been for you?
I really associate stillness with mindfulness. I don't know if that's because of, you know, yoga practice or what, but typically when I practice stillness, I find that it helps me become very present to the moment and to my body, whatever I'm feeling or doing in the moment, which can be very grounding. And I think it's also like, it's true for the body center types, but we also, our culture so prioritizes productivity, getting things done. Like, you are your accomplishments. And so I think that it can be a very powerful act of spiritual resistance to say like, nope, I'm not going to do the thing today. I'm going to be still. And I think that's really, really healthy.
Yeah. I mean, especially like the narrative around so much of our culture is like, do, accomplish more. If you're sitting still, like you got to be moving forward, build your thing, build your empire, do your thing. And or mix that even with like righteous doing, like cause driven doing, like it's, you know, there's a lot of messaging. It's like, you have to find your purpose, go find your cause, go do your thing. And if you haven't, then there's this like existential like dread and guilt, like, oh no. And it's hard to untangle your identity from those things.
Yeah.
So what comes to mind is the difference between doing and being, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I've tried to be more intentional about the way that I show up, whether it's in a conversation or in a room with other people, or just literally the way that I walk into a room. And because it's very easy for me to be very fast and very quick and be focused and just be, you know, my mind is on what, because there is this ADHD component for me where it's like, if I get distracted, I will forget what I was getting ready to do and it throws me off. Yeah, I think there's like ways that I show up that is more of a doing than it is a being. And so it's like, how do I bring that? There is a stillness component to that, I think, of slowing myself down. And it's almost like snapping out of being just reactive. It's bringing intentionality. Now I'm rambling, but yeah, that's.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed about you is you always put a greeting in your text messages. Like, you're never just like, you know, where's that thing? But you're like, hey, yeah. Good morning. How are you? I'm looking for that thing. Where's that thing? And I appreciate that because it's like, you're not just getting the thing done. Like, you're still like, you're remembering, like, we're human beings. Let's be human beings.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to do the thing. Like, the thing needs to be done.
But right.
That's not the full extent of our relationship.
Yeah. Know? Right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. Benjamin's like, well, he doesn't do that with me.
they're just emojis and pictures that come.
Yeah, right.
So let me just, as we wrap up this little portion here, I want to share this little quote from Chris Hewitt's book that I think is helpful. He says that when we give ourselves to contemplative practices marked by solitude, silence, and stillness, our souls are nurtured, our virtues blossom, and our true self comes forward. Contemplative spirituality calms the body, stills the emotions, and quiets the mind. And in doing so, it liberates us from ego addictions, thereby giving us the freedom to make major corrections to our behaviors informed by our true self. The Enneagram shines a light on what obstructs our essence from emerging and opens our path to God. Contemplative spirituality then helps us overcome those obstacles, awakening to the gift of our true identity. Thank you both for your time and your presence and your being and your fullness of your true identity right here.
Benjamin, Scott, as always, thank you for a lovely conversation. Thank you for a series of conversations, actually. We are wrapping up our Enneagram conversation series today. I hope you know, friends, that these conversations are never intended to be the period at the end of the sentence. We always want to model and demonstrate what conversation can look like and then invite you to continue it, whether that's with a trusted friend or with a group like a table gathering or even with your journal to continue the conversation, to continue exploring these ideas. We think that this is good and important work, and we hope that you're engaging with it. So the first question I want to consider today is, which intelligence center do you seem to be in? If you've figured out which Enneagram number you are likely to be, maybe this is an easy question to answer. If you're still working on it, maybe that's a more difficult question. But whichever the case, what is your experience with the contemplative practice or discipline that is crucial for that center? Silence, stillness, solitude. What's your experience been like? Maybe what's your experience been like with any of those? Second, what contemplative discipline of those three is the one that you are most drawn to? Which one seems to help you quiet your mind and your soul and create space for the Holy Spirit to move in your life, for the voice of God to be audible to your ear? Which one of those is the most enticing, if you will? And if it's one that's not in your particular intelligence center, maybe you're in the heart center, and so solitude would be the crucial discipline, but you're more connected and drawn towards stillness. That doesn't mean that you figured out your wrong Enneagram number. That just means that's who you are and how you are. And I hope that you're able to get curious about that. My hope with this whole series is that you have been inspired to become curious about yourself and about why you are the way you are, why you think the way you think, and why you do the things you do. I hope that you have discovered some new insights about yourself, and I hope that you've gained some language and some tools that may help you brave the shadowy places of your heart and bring them into God's light. So as we go from here, I wonder, what is it that you want to take with you from this Enneagram series? Maybe there's a way of thinking or a particular insight or tool that stands out to you. Maybe there's a question that you want to dive into a little more, an area of the Enneagram that you're really curious about and you want to learn more about it. Maybe there's a practice that you want to bring into this next season of your life. Whatever that is, just make a note. And then also, is there anything that you want to leave here? Anything that you want to give up or let go of? Maybe there's something that you let go of or gave up in Lent, and you feel like the right choice is not to pick it back up. You know, maybe that's a particular pattern of thinking, something you always tell yourself, something that is a behavior that you've realized is more about numbing and not about living. Whatever that is, if there's something that you want to lie down and leave here, I hope that you can feel the freedom to do that. And finally, if you would like to share anything about this series, what it's meant for you, what you've learned, we would love to hear from you. You can email info@theorchardcommunity.com to let us know what this series has done for you. And now, friends, I have a few things to tell you before we leave each other today. The first is a reminder that if you have been impacted by the work of the Orchard Community and want to help it continue to impact you and impact others, then you can be part of what keeps this thing going. There is no larger church or umbrella organization financially supporting the Orchard. Everything we do is because of individuals who believe in the work of this church community and want to see it continue. If you would like to be part of that group and help support this work, you can give in three simple ways. You can give online, you can give via the app, or you can mail a check to our P.O. box. Friends, if you are supporting, thank you so much. Your work is absolutely making a difference. Second, I want to remind you about Easter Sunday. If you are local to the Aurora, Illinois area, I hope that we will see you at our Easter Sunday gathering on Easter, March 31st at 11 a.m. at Society 57. It's going to be a really special and fun time. We've got some exciting things planned, and I cannot wait to see you there. And friends, leading up into Easter, we have some resources for you for Holy Week. The first is, if you are local to Aurora, our friends at New England Congregational Church on the corner of Galena and Chestnut are putting together a Holy Thursday service, or Tenebrae service, and have invited our community to be part of it. This is a special service that will feature some music, readings, and the extinguishing of candles. It's a meditative type of service, but it is interactive and appropriate for all ages. So I hope to see you there. It will be March 28th, that's Thursday, 7 p.m. at New England Congregational. We also have some resources we've created especially for this week. The first is a Good Friday contemplative prayer walk that is designed for you to do either solo. So if you're needing to practice that solitude, this is a good one for that. There is a guide that you can download. It's designed to fit on your phone's screen, and you can take that with you and prepare for a simple walk that can be as long or as short as your body needs, with some stops throughout to read and to pray and to consider the final events of Jesus's life on earth. We also have a table liturgy for Easter, which you can print and use with your family, friends, whoever might be gathering around your table at Easter. It includes things like a blessing, a prayer for the world, and some questions that we hope will provoke some good mealtime conversation. It's a way to make a gathering around the table feel a little more sacred and a little more meaningful. So if that is something that you would like to use at your table, that is available for you. You can download it right from our website. All of these resources and a couple of others that we have found from other people on the internet that we like are collected for you at theorchardcommunity.com/holyweek. And now, friends, as we go from here, I leave you with this poem by Jan Richardson. It's titled, very appropriately, Blessing for Palm Sunday. Blessed is the one who comes to us by the way of love poured out with abandon. Blessed is the one who walks towards us by the way of grace that holds us fast. Blessed is the one who calls us to follow in the way of blessing, in the path of joy. Amen. Orchard, may you go with grace and peace into this Holy Week. We'll see you at Easter.